Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 187. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And this is it, folks. This is the moment we wait all year for, at least I do. I always look forward to this shit. For this episode, we are doing our, you know, year awards, you know, best, et cetera, et cetera. And for next week's episode, we are doing our top 10 along, you know, with our best movies of the year. So, I'm excited. I don't know about you, Chris, but
yeah,
this is always fun. But before we get into it, you know, last week we did honorable mentions. Chris, did you have any, like, last-minute honorable mentions you wanted to add? Or did you have any big shakeups on your list in the last week
that will
be revealed in the week to come?
I do have something dropped out of my top 10. This week, it was a movie we talked about. It was on your honorable mention, Searching. Just didn't make the cut after I realigned some things.
Okay. So that would be make it another honorable mention, then, I guess. I mean, I didn't make any changes to my list. So I just wanted to, because I don't know, some of the movies I've seen in the last week might have made it. So I just wanted to say, right, you know, before we dig into any of this, that I did see the film Roma.
Okay.
The new Alfonso Cuarón film, which is on Netflix. Did you see that yet, Chris?
I have not seen it yet. It did come up on a list I was reading today as the number one film of the year.
Yeah, it's he's going to win some awards. It's an Oscar. It's like a really good example of like an Oscar bait film, but a good one. You know, like right. I mean, I felt emotional watching it. There are moments of just absolute stunning beauty in it. Like, you know, some of the cinematography. It's in black and white. There's a scene on a beach that just straight up blew me away. I couldn't believe how beautiful it looked. And you know, it's a movie that you know has some big emotions and stuff. It's a little slow. Like, if you go to watch it on Netflix, I think it's, like, a little over 2 hours. Just be warned that, like, the first half hour or so, at the very least, is pretty slow. It has a pretty slow pace through the whole thing, but, like, I'd say it's totally worth it, dude.
Okay.
And I saw another movie tonight that I really enjoyed as well. That was, you know, came as a pretty shocker to me. It was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Not huge on comic book movies, at least that's what I always say. I think I realized tonight that maybe I'm just not big on the MCU movies, because boy, this was a fantastic movie. I really enjoyed it.
I saw it too. It's super fun. There's a lot of heart to it. Some great characters, great voice acting, excellent animation, awesome art style.
Yes.
Great soundtrack. Everything kind of clicks with it.
Yeah, the animation in particular is just mind-blowing, and the art style, like the colors and everything. But love how it's constantly making nods to the fact that this is adapted from comic book material. Like, it feels like a comic book come to life. And also, it, you know, on top of just, like, the look of it, like... I mean, I call it camera work, but I guess in animation, it's kind of, it's mimicking camera work or whatever. Yeah. Like, just the way the camera moves around in that fucking movie. And just great story. Like, it's just, it felt fresh. I really, really, really liked it. So, just wanted to throw those out there because they're not going to be on my list. But I don't know, maybe if I had more time to stew with them and think about them, maybe Roma or Spider-Man could have crept onto my list. I don't know.
You literally just finished watching Spider-Man like an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times when you enjoy a movie, when you first come out of it, you're like, man, that's definitely going to be on the list. But you know, sometimes you have to let them sit a little bit and see. At the end of the day, I'm not making any last-minute changes to my list because like it would hurt me too much to change it. Like, I'm like, I'm so set on the movies that I picked.
Right.
But those are both fantastic. So definitely recommended to anybody out there. Well, shit, Chris, another year has passed. Let's get to the awards, man.
Let's do it.
And, you know, I'm just going in the order I have it in on my computer here. So hopefully you'll be able to find them on your list, Chris. I'm going to start off with Best Actor and hit me with what you got, Chris.
John David Washington from BlacKkKlansman.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
I know John David Washington from the series Ballers.
Yeah.
And I like him in that. Plays a very different character, but he really blew me away in BlacKkKlansman. Excellent sense of dramatic timing to go along with what I already knew. He already had good comic timing. But it just, yeah, great performance all around, I think, in that movie. And he's going to be someone to watch going forward.
Yeah, I mean, he's Denzel's kid, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he is.
I wouldn't have guessed that just by looking at him, but, you know, I found that out after reading reviews and stuff. He's good. He's really good. He carries that movie. It's just one thing that just popped in my head once you said it. I love how, like, it's in the trailer, the way he says, he's like, with the right white man, we could do anything. But yeah, that's an awesome choice. I did consider him, actually. He was on my short list. Him, as well as I consider John Cho from Searching.
Okay.
I can see that. He gave a really good performance, and a lot of it, his is like, it's pretty impressive because he's just staring at a computer screen.
Yeah.
But enough about him, because he wasn't my winner. I went with Nicolas Cage, Mandy.
Okay. That's did not see that coming.
It might be one of my more surprising ones for sure. I think part of it is I think Nicolas Cage, he's been like unfairly turned into like a butt of a joke over like the last decade or so, you know, like this was a guy, I mean, he won Best Actor before like the Oscar, you know?
Yes, he has.
And I revisited the film he won it for recently, Leaving Las Vegas. I'm like, man, this guy is fucking great. Like, yeah, he's always like on tilt and he's always going crazy, like kind of, but that's part of what's like awesome about him is how he's just willing to go there. And he, of course, does that here in a movie that kind of matches his insanity. And there's certain scenes in this that I think he leaves it all in the field, especially there's like a bathroom scene right in the middle before he goes to get his revenge where he's like grieving his wife. And it's kind of like chilling. Like it's almost comical how over the top it is. Like he's just like, oh, he's screaming and drinking booze. But, you know, as the camera slowly like zooms in on him, you can see, like, he looks like he's really like feeling what's happening and losing it. It's just, I don't know, just something that just an intensity to this performance that I really enjoyed. And also, like I said, I just feel like the guy needs his due. He's been unfairly shit on, I think. I mean, he's done a lot of like weird straight to video stuff.
He's done a lot of shit.
But we're in a bit of a, you know, cage-a-sance here with Mandy, and he was also in Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
But yeah, props to Nick Cage, man. That's my pick for Best Actor 2018.
Fair enough.
What about Best Actress, Chris?
Best Actress for me is Lady Gaga. So I know that she is an actress. Like she has appeared in television shows. Yeah. She was kind of the big draw of American Horror Story, I think season 5. I don't know. I just did not like, I mean, she's obviously very theatrical, right? In the way she performs.
Yeah. Just
like overall, like in terms of her persona as Lady Gaga,
as a pop star. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of how she was used in the TV stuff I've seen her in. And in this, she just gives like a great reserved performance that is super emotive and just plays off of that script in such a way. And she's able to be that partner to Bradley Cooper that he needs in that film. And I mean, she's up there with some of the best performances I've seen from an actress in the last few years. So,
yeah, I mean, if she wasn't already a huge pop star, this would be a star-making performance. Oh, yeah. It would be a Star Is Born. Like, she is, she's excellent in it. She was my first choice for Best Actress, but I actually didn't go with her. At the last minute, like the other day, I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, yeah, fucking Toni Collette better get her due for Hereditary. So that is my choice. I totally get Lady Gaga. Like, I agree with you 100%. Like, it's just, she's great in it. But I think Toni Collette was, like, really fucking good in Hereditary. Some chilling stuff in that movie. And it's one of those, like, roles I was, like, hoping gets recognition as, you know, as we hit award season here. Because, one, it happened so far back. Like, in, what is it, June that movie came out. And, two, it was a horror movie. So I feel like she might get shafted on it. So I wanted to at least, I'll at least acknowledge her. Toni Collette, I love you. You were great. So was Lady Gaga, but I just gave the edge to Toni Collette. I have a feeling, though, that both of these performances are going to get nominated for Best Actress.
It's distinctly possible. The buzz on Hereditary seems to be not as strong going into award season.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far out. That's one thing. But if I were A24, I would be doing whatever politics I have to do to get in the conversation. I think Lady Gaga is almost an assured
nominee. Yeah, I don't think there's any problem with anything from A Star Is Born.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's going to get its props.
In fact, I'm worried that Star Is Born might win too much. You know, while I liked it, I didn't mention it last week, and I won't be mentioning it in my top 10 tonight. But anyways, that's our picks for Best Actress. We're going to go into supporting category now. Best Supporting Actor. I guess I'll go first because I was just saying Star Is Born is going to get too many awards. I'm going to give Star Is Born an award here. Sam Elliott, man. Dude broke my heart in that movie.
Yeah.
Anytime I think of his performance, I think of that shot of him pulling out of the driveway after his brother told him that it was him that he always looked up to. And you could just see the tears welling up in his eyes. And it's just it feels like such a real performance. Like that's not even a character. Like, that guy is a real person. I thought he was excellent in it. I'll be surprised if he doesn't get nominated, but he's my choice for Best Supporting. How about you, Chris?
For Best Supporting, I'm actually going to stick with Black Klansman here. And,
yeah.
It's, you know, he's received some shit as a for being, you know, the Darth Vader knockoff, which I enjoy in the Star Wars movies, but Adam Driver has a real, like, he does a great job here as the counterpart to John David Washington. I think that the two of them together have great chemistry on screen. So,
yeah, they're a great duo. So that makes them a great supporting, you know, role. And Adam Driver's an awesome actor. I think he's a great villain in Star Wars as well. But Star Wars people are crazy. So, sorry, Chris, you guys are crazy.
I mean, this is fair.
Not to lump you in with the truly crazy ones, but I just don't know how you could be upset with these new Star Wars movies. They're excellent. I'm not like a Star Wars, like, I enjoy Star Wars, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, these are excellent. And then the people that love it the most are like, it's like a civil war in the fandom.
Yep.
Just enjoy it. Be happy that you're getting good movies. I don't know. I guess according to some people, they're terrible, but not to get on a Star Wars tangent. how about for Best Supporting Actress, Chris?
For Best Supporting Actress, I'm going to go with Claire Foy.
Interesting.
In First Man. She's Ryan Gosling is the star of that film, but the emotional kind of core of it is Claire Foy as Janet Armstrong.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that, like, it's really a lead role there. Like, she doesn't have a ton of on screen. So
she's definitely supporting, but I like the case that you're making in that, like, a big part of it is kind of bouncing the story off of her, you know?
Yeah, like, it has to balance with her because he is so emotionless. He has locked all of his emotions away. He internalizes everything. So she's kind of that, that, you know, touchstone to the real world, that keeps him grounded and it kind of tells him that, like, hey, I know this bad thing has happened in the past. It happened to me too, but there's other things here that are important. And that also helps drive him to his ultimate goal. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you for explaining for me, because she is my choice for best supporting actress. I'm just going to add to that. Like, she kind of came into her own in the last year. So, like, she's in, like, a ton of movies in the last year. And so, like, I took notice of her over the last year. So I think that's part of it, too, is me going, like, man, this girl's good, man. Like, maybe there's a slight crush thing going on. I do like how she's constantly smoking cigarettes in First Men. I don't know. Like, that's part. But I just like her. Like, she's a good presence. And you're right. Like, you made the case for why, like, her performance in First Man stuck out. Like, it's not just... A lot of movies like this would just, like, cut to the wife to, you know, remind you of the stakes or whatever. But right. She's much more fleshed out in this than usually the wife would be.
Yeah, she's more of, like, the... She's given narrative purpose to kind of... She's not what's at stake, right? It's his humanity, really, in a lot of ways. So she's there to kind of guide him as well as be that cliche touchstone back as well.
Yeah. Agreed. We're in agreement. This is our first shared award. Claire Foy for Best Supporting Actress, First Man. All right. This should be a fun one. Best twist.
Best twist. All right. We did not get to talk about this film last week. It's from a film called Pooka, which is a Hulu original. So they're Hulu has been, like, every holiday they've been releasing, like, a new film to kind of go along with that holiday. And Pooka is their Christmas themed horror film.
I was reading about this the other day. I think
it is about a kind of like a Barney Teletubby type character that sweeps the nation. But the guy inside is the supernatural things start happening to him. Ultimately, the twist is that he has something really bad had happened. And I mean, I guess we're gonna have to spoil it here.
Yeah, you
can spoil it. He believes he is the toy, okay. And he's been having these flashbacks after this horrible car accident, where he was an abusive husband and father, and his anger caused an accident that, well, maybe not his anger. His anger put his family in a position where they ended up being killed by a drunk driver, and somebody else was in that other car as well, and he was the only survivor. And all the characters, so the little boy who ends up being his son, the mother who ends up being his girlfriend in the movie, the drunk lady that hit his car, who ends up being his landlord. And his boss, who ends up being the ambulance driver, like all these people that are in this accident, he has built this construct in his head as he becomes Pooka. So it all takes place like in his head, and it's this nutty fucking thing. I was enjoying it up until then, and then they drop this like in the last like 4 or 5 minutes. It was like, holy shit.
So is it like, is it like one of those twists at the end where you're like, everything I just saw was actually in the dude's head?
Yes.
Oh God, I hate those twists, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's everything at like everything that has happened beforehand is
The Usual Suspects. I hate that movie. I hate that twist. I hate going, oh, everything I just saw was bullshit. Thanks.
Well,
thanks for
well, in a way it was like, I mean, in a way it is all bullshit, but it's the story of like how like he comes to be in contact with it up until he finally realizes like the realization that he is not this thing. This thing is not responsible for all of his, all of the bad things that have happened in his life. It's him. He was the one the entire time. So it's like if you were to take out Puka, if you were to take out what Puka is doing, the murdering and all that throughout the film, it's really just him being like a bad person. So it's like more a like internal metaphor for being a shitty dude.
Yeah.
It's kind of nutso. I enjoyed it. If you don't like that type of, I would say it's, maybe stick away from it, yeah. But
I mean, I might watch it because I did hear about it, and you know, it's like a bigger thing that Hulu's putting out. But well, now I know. Not, at least now I won't be like fucking pissed when it comes. My twist is another big one, but doesn't negate everything. Well, I guess yours maybe doesn't negate everything before it, but mine is Workhorses from Sorry to Bother You.
Yes,
you know, so late in that, I mean. The trailer sets you up for a film about a guy who gets a telemarketing job and excels at it, and like that's part of the movie, right? Like,
yeah.
But you know, it's there's a lot more going on. And it's a lot more to it than that. He gets promoted because he's really good, and then he starts selling slave labor.
Yep.
And then near the end, there's this big twist where you find out like. The guy who runs another company, who like basically runs like the Amazon in the world of this film,
is
working on turning his workforce into literally like human horses. And he wants our main character to be a false leader to these human horses. And he wants him to become a horse too. And the way this is revealed is in this moment where our main character like goes to the bathroom and he finds these nightmare creatures like chained up in the bathroom. It's just so insane and out of left field, and yet speaks to everything that the film has been trying to tell you all along. And all of a sudden, it's just like hitting you with a hammer over the head with it. And it's followed by like this really awesome, like claymation short explaining everything. it's like a wacky, crazy, wild twist in this already kind of weird and offbeat comedy, and it just goes crazier from that. It's just something like you could see. It's just so wild. It was like one of those things where, like, granted, like this movie never became like a huge hit, but it was like you tell someone to go see Sorry to Bother You, and you're like, just trust me, man. Like, can't really say that much, but. It's fucked up. And then, like, it goes, like, weird, like, kind of crazy sci-fi territory almost after that, where, like, the horses revolt against, you know, and, like, they're running through the streets and fucking shit up. Like, I don't know. It's just, like, you did not see that coming. So, that is mine, man.
It's a good one.
My runner-up there was Three Identical Strangers, which has a twist, like, every 3 fucking minutes. But I just really loved the horses from Sorry to Bother You. You know, some people might confuse these two, but I guess they're related. They're cousins. Our next category, Chris, is best ending. What do you got?
Best ending for me is Sorry to Bother You.
Are you now thinking of like the final shot, or are you thinking more of that twist also, or what?
Like, I mean, more like the. I guess the final culmination of like that how last it wraps act. Up. But that ending also, like the final shot of like
final shot's fantastic.
Like is also excellent, like all the way through. But yeah, I think like the whole sequence of events, like of the workers rising up to to kind of take back what is theirs. And it is a great, great scene. You know, there's a lot going on in Sorry to Bother You.
Yes, and
I think its messaging, though, is true all the way throughout. Even outlandish as it gets, it's always kind of like driving, and it has this very clear message that it's trying to deliver to people. So,
yeah,
I think it does very well with that ending to be like, hey, ultimately, this is what we have to do.
Yeah, it's all grounded in Boots Riley's ideology. Like, he is making a very strong political statement. But yeah, I just also just love right before it cuts to the credits, he turns around and he's got the horse nose. Like, I was like, oh, you know, it's just like a, and the best thing in both screenings I saw it at, someone goes, what the fuck? Like, someone in the audience is like, what the fuck did I just see? Yeah, I mean, I love that ending. But for me, the best ending was the one where, like, the whole theater was silent at the end of it. And for me, that was, you know, connecting the past to the present at the end of Black Klansman. So we probably, like, I don't know if we discussed it in, like, a spoiler section of our review. But Black Klansman is about, like, you know, it's about this cop in the 70s. He's, like, one of the first black cops in this town. And he, like, infiltrates the local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, right? And that's the story we see. And at the end, you know, it's like, oh, he solved it and everything's happy. And that's how a lot of movies would end. But this one kind of ends with him, like, talking with his girlfriend. And she's like, I don't know if I could still be with you because you're a cop. Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden they see something outside their window and they go out. And there's people burning a cross, like, outside their window. And then it cuts to the present where they're showing, you know, Spike Lee shows clips of Charlottesville. And of our fucking racist president saying racist fucking shit. And to me, that edging was like super powerful and depressing. And it hit you. It punches you.
Yeah.
It's just such the opposite of how movies about race usually are done. They're in a lot of ways done by white people, and it shows. And I think that, you know, Spike Lee did the right thing. He didn't say this is something that happened in the past. And isn't it great that we're so much better now? It was like, no, not a lot has changed. Like, he didn't really accomplish as much as he thought it, you know?
Right.
Just for me, that was really powerful ending. And you could feel it. You could feel the vibe as you left the theater from that film.
Because the 3-4 minutes before, so even like before, like the whole, the very stylistic shot of seeing the cross burning outside the window, like there's this like hysterical phone conversation that John David Washington.
It really feels like it's letting you off the hook, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like we solved racism.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it reels back, like it has this like super upbeat. Everyone feels good about what's happened. And then it's like, hey, shit's still bad. Like, you know, still bad. And then for him to really drive that whole thing home and go, and it's still bad now.
Yeah. And in some ways, maybe kind of worse. They're not wearing hoods anymore. Yeah.
Right. Like, they're just out in the open. Like, it's super powerful.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to be talking a lot of Black Klansmen. So I'll just leave it at that. It was a great ending. It was my favorite. How about best villain, Chris?
Best villain for me is Eric Killmonger.
All right,
in cool. Black Panther. Won't see a lot of MCU stuff on either of our lists, I don't think. But Black Panther was one of the few MCU movies that really had a message behind it and had some depth to their villain. It wasn't the whole, oh, I'm a bad guy because you wronged me and I'm trying to take over the world. Like, you know, Killmonger has very explicit reasons for doing what he wants to do. And I think he is way more nuanced than any other villain that we've had in the MCU. So,
yeah, we talked about him a bunch, I think, throughout the year anyways. Like, I think he's one of the better Marvel villains for sure. And you know, a lot of people are like, Killmonger is right. And it's like, you could see it. You could see his point of view. So,
right.
That's a great choice. I mean, and of course, Michael B. Jordan is awesome in the role.
Yes, he is.
I'm going in complete opposite direction because my best villain is just kind of a force of nature. You know, you don't really know what makes him tick. You just know he's fucking evil. And that is Daniel Kaluuya as Jatem in Widows.
Yeah, he's very good as well.
He's kind of like Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. It's just like, once he, like, he's magnetic when he shows up on the screen, you're just like, but you're like, this guy is fucking pure evil. He's going to fucking kill everything. You know what I mean? And he does. He's great in it. I wish he went out in a cooler way than the movie gives us, but yeah, that's just life sometimes, I guess.
And I wish he was given a little more screen time to be evil.
Yeah.
But that film is so loaded with people that...
The one or two scenes you get of him, though,
are, yeah, like that great.
The bowling alley when he's sticking the people, like, or the scene when he makes the guys rap, like, oh my god, dude, like,
yeah,
it's just, those are like iconic scenes. So yeah, I mean, as soon as I saw that movie, I got home, I like ran and filled in the blank spot on my computer for best villain. Like, that is sealed. All right, best tearjerker. Chris, what movie made you cry?
In terms of overall film, I mean, A Star Is Born has multiple moments throughout it, but Jesus Christ, that fucking dog.
I forgot exactly what it was. It's like the dog's like staring at the garage door or something.
Yeah, like, so, shit, so right? Like that, yeah, the dog is like
in the driveway, yeah, laying down.
Like, you know, the Bradley Cooper's character, he makes the dog like a nice steak and feeds the dog, and then he goes into the garage and kills himself. And there's just this shot of the dog outside the garage, like, just like waiting.
Is the garage door closed? Like, he's sitting, yeah, in front of it, the closed garage.
He's, yeah, just, yeah, sitting in front of it. Yeah,
that's horrible. Yeah, I remember that part. I'm like, I knew. I can't remember if I probably was like a little teared up at that point, but like, I felt so manipulated by that like ending or like that part of the movie. Like, it's just going for all like the cliches and everything, but you know, sometimes that shit works.
Yeah.
I think I was on the edge a little bit. I was like, part of me was like, it was working. And then there's part of my brain where I was like, no, fuck this. This is bullshit. of course you put the dog by the door. You know, like, that's what I was like thinking in my head. Like, you sons of bitches. But yeah, it was on my short list. I have A Star Is Born. I have the ending of Black Klansman, which I did tear up at. But I think the one that kind of like snuck up on me and I just didn't see it, didn't expect it, and was Searching. And it's just like the beginning of Searching is like the beginning of Up. It's like this montage of like going through time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Searching is the movie on the computer, the screen life film where John Cho was looking for his daughter. And at the very beginning of the film, like the first 3 to 5 minutes or so, like, you're seeing like videos from her computer, and you know, they're from her growing up, like her going to piano recital or whatever. And you know, like a period of like at least 10 years passes in this time. And during that, you get to see her mom getting sick with cancer and dying. It's just like, it's this super, you know, well edited, well done with the fucking music and everything. And it's like, you're going into this thriller about a missing daughter that like, you're not expecting it to like sucker punch you at the beginning like that.
Yep.
So I found it very effective. I wasn't like bawling, but I did definitely tear up at it. So that's mine.
A good one.
I'm gonna go ahead and I'll go first on this one, Chris. I have a feeling you might back me up. I don't want to presume anything. But best summer movie, Chris, I have Mission Impossible Fallout.
That is what I have as well. So
I mean, what can you say? It's one of the best action films in years. Just impressive on every level with practical stunts. I mean, it's what you expect out of a summer movie. I don't know. What do you have?
It's not just what you expect. It's
better than what you expect.
Yeah. What I've expected is kind of what we've gotten over the last 2 years. Yeah. This just kind of blew me away with, and I love the Mission Impossible franchise, but this one just really hit all the right notes. It is a culmination of everything that Tom Cruise has been doing with that series, particularly since 3, though, when J.J. Abrams kind of took over. And that this is the wrapping up of that storyline, and does it in grand fashion. Awesome set pieces, a great story, fantastic characters, some great twists along the way. It's everything that a summer movie should be.
Yep. I just remember coming out of that theater with a big old smile. And actually, it was one where I drove to Rockford, which is about 30 miles away from me here, to see it in IMAX. And so it reminds me of summer too, because I remember getting out and it was still like it was just getting dark and stuff, and just driving through the country home. Like, it was really cool. Anyways, it's obviously Mission Impossible. What the fuck else could it be? Anyways, Chris, best TV.
Best TV. So I didn't watch a ton of TV this year.
Me neither. Watched a little bit.
Yeah, and a few new things. But one that has kind of grabbed me recently is the new sci-fi horror series Night Stalkers.
I've not even heard of this.
It's a George R. R. Martin.
Okay. I know, I've heard of him.
Game of Thrones. And it is this think like Event Horizon meets like Sunshine, very similar there, but Event Horizon more action oriented. Sunshine a little more cerebral. This is kind of in the middle, and it's very well done. I think production is very solid. I've enjoyed everything. I haven't seen the entire thing, so maybe it jumps off a cliff in the last few episodes, but everything about it is hitting the right notes for me. I would give a honorable mention to the Purge TV series.
Oh, really?
Which I've ended up, I haven't watched the whole thing either. That's on USA, but what I have seen of it is a lot of fun. And like a more blown out, drawn out Purge, I guess. So it's interesting.
I haven't even heard of Night Stalkers, but I might have to look into that. I've not checked out The Purge, but I saw the movies. Does that count?
Sure.
My best TV, I was like thinking about it for a minute, but I was like, oh yeah, obviously, duh. It's fucking Wild Wild Country. That documentary was fucking fantastic. Like, it was like the level of riveting of Making a Murderer, where it was like, it's real life and it's documentary, and all it basically is interviews with people. But the story was so fucking good that you're like, the episode would end and you'd be like, I need to see what happens next. You know what I mean?
Right.
I raved about it a lot on here, but if people have not heard our earlier episodes and they just listen to these, it's about this cult moving into this like little town in the middle of nowhere. And kind of a friction that happens between the cult and the town. And it goes all sorts of crazy directions from, is like the leader of this cult, like, or is one of the people like not the leader, but one of the underlings, like person right below. Is she like murdering people? They're like poisoning the town's water and shit, like to get even with the town. Like, just crazy shit going on. Like, there's a part about them blending up beavers and putting beavers into the water supply, and you're like, what? But, like, you know, assassination attempts and crazy shit like that. Like, the cult just kind of, like, taking over the town government because there's more of them and just start renaming the street, like, street names and stuff like that. Like, just going crazy. And, it, like, the cool thing about it is, like, it's this thing that happened in, like, the early 80s that I guess if you were, like, an adult at the time, you would probably remember. Like, you'd probably be like, oh, yeah, I remember hearing that on the news. Because they show you in it, like, they show you, like, Letterman talk or whoever talking about it, like Johnny Carson talking about it, you know? So you're like, okay, so it was in the national news. But it's wild because, like, I never heard the story. And it's crazy too because they have a ton of footage from the time, like an insane amount of footage. Like, it's almost like they knew they were going to make a documentary about this one day and they had all this footage. It's just really cool. I know it's like a commitment, but it's worth it. You know, I forgot how many episodes it was, but I think it's like six, so it's not
that bad,
not too long. I'd still say check it out, Chris. Anyways, back to films. Best action scene, Chris.
Best action scene. I actually struggled with this one because there's a ton of
it's all in one movie.
Of yeah, and there are. So I actually just threw out all the not possible nominations for Mission Impossible Fallout and went with the train robbery scene in Solo, which is a
oh my god,
fantastic. What? It's really. Have you seen Solo yet?
This is blasphemous. No, I have not. It's still blasphemous.
It is. It is an excellent.
Better than.
Like it is the one that is really stuck. Like, so I was like trying to think. I was like, all right, well, there's like the chase through Paris, and like there's the helicopter
motorcycle,
scene,
but
Triumph. Yeah, but it's like I couldn't think of the whole scene from start to finish, and the train robbery in Solo is one that really kind of I remember everything about it, like. The way everything operates, the way character interactions happen, characters that die, everything kind of stands out as it's the most kind of like iconic scene in that film. And I think that like in terms of action sequences, it's a damn good one. So not a lot of props are going to be given to Solo at all.
No.
these two episodes. So I'm going to fit my Star Wars on here.
I'm blown away. I'm totally surprised by that choice. Like for me, like even if like I was thinking that in my head, I would be going, yeah, but like Tom Cruise did it. You know, like for me, like part of what makes Mission Impossible so fucking impressive is, like, is that they're doing like, it. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Everything is just like so, everything in that movie was so on the same level.
It was hard for you to even, yeah. You're just like, okay, I'm going to set this aside. For me, though, this wasn't hard. This was the helicopter chase, the finale.
Okay.
I think it's the best finale in the whole series. Like, so. My favorite Mission Impossible is 3 because I think it has like the better story and the better villain.
Yeah.
But I don't think its finale is nearly as good as this. This is fucking bonkers. It's a helicopter. It's two helicopters chasing each other around a fucking mountain and shit. And then just knowing that like what you're seeing, like, yes, there is computer effects like added in, but knowing that they really did it, like Tom Cruise really did. On the rope and falling down the fucking rope and then, you know, getting up in the helicopter and then he's really flying the helicopter around. They're really doing this shit. That to me, like, just adds to it. But on top of it, like, like that's like always in the back of my head in any stunt scene in Mission Impossible is going, wow, like this is so cool that they did this, right?
Yeah.
But on top of it, like this was just like whether they fucking green screened it or whatever the fuck, like I've never seen like a scene like that. Like I guess there's been helicopter chases before. But these are like they're like ramming into each other. Like it was absolutely fucking insane. So this was no brainer for me. Like I do think that the whole Paris sequence is super impressive too, and it kind of goes like from like you know motorcycle to foot to fucking boat and shit. Like it's just all over. Like it's a huge, massive set piece. But for me, the helicopter chase is just so like next level. I'm just like, okay, it was instantly to that. Also, you're crazy. I mean, I guess I haven't seen Solo yet, but that's I did not. I thought for sure it was just going to be a toss up between what you thought was the coolest thing in Mission Impossible. I think the two big surprises for the night are Nicolas Cage and that.
Yeah.
But let's see if we got more in us. Best gore / violence.
Well, speaking of Nicolas Cage, going with Mandy.
Whoa!
There is some disturbing ass shit in that film that has stuck with me. I don't particularly love that film. I am certainly not a champion for it in any way. But there are sequences in that film that are.
Oh, I think I know what you're thinking of, probably.
Gross and uber violent and unsettling. And just the way they. Whew, that sequence where they kill his wife is.
That's what I was thinking of, yeah.
It's brutal. And whew, I never want to watch that again.
I've seen it twice now. I will see it again. I didn't think of that one though. Just because like the things that stand out to me in that movie more than anything is like the vibe. Like that movie is like a lot of vibe and then just like colors and fucking all of a sudden we're going into an animated sequence and then all of a sudden fucking they're showing title cards on this. Like it was just weirdness. Which you know we'll be talking about that movie more, but for me also there's one that really really stuck out and really blew me away, and it you know there was no competition really for me, and it was The Night Comes for Us. It was so much that even you, a seasoned like horror veteran, was like, this is almost exhausting.
Yeah, that was a physically draining film to watch.
I mean, but this is like a movie where you see close up like a fucking machete coming out of someone's neck or like, I don't know, man, dude getting shot in the head so fast and so many times that like his fucking head turns into pulp, like just exploding. Like it was just a nonstop insane orgy of violence to the point where it's like almost so much that it's overwhelming. Like it's almost too much to process, but that's, I mean, like I just told you a couple things that stuck out in my head from watching it. Or what about the girl with like the razor wire things or like, you know, like there's like things that come to mind for sure. And it's just, it's because it's so much, I can't wait to like watch it again someday, like in the future. Like, because I guarantee I'm going to catch things I didn't see the first time. And it's the same thing with, like, The Raid. But, like, this movie was even more than The Raid and more violent than The Raid. So, yeah, there was no contest for me. Like, this has – it's not even a horror film. And it has some of the very best gore of the year. I guess going into a related category, though, best horror movie, Chris.
I mean – For me, there's only one option, and that's Halloween.
Same. I mean, it's look, like it's not one of the original movies of the year. It's a sequel, but it's just, dude, it's Halloween. Like, I'm a Halloween kid, man.
Yeah, and it does everything right. for a Halloween movie. It for a movie that kills everything after the first movie, and this is a franchise that's been going for 40 years. For a film that kills everything after that first film, it is a love letter to the series.
Yes.
And also, it is legitimately scary at points, has some super violent imagery, and damn, is it not satisfying. Like,
and it feels like a film in a way that not a lot of slasher movies do. Like, it has a soul. Like, it has characters. Like, it cares about those characters. It's not just... we're setting up a bunch of teens in a cabin and we're going to kill them. It's nothing like that at all. In fact, it's a lot about the character from the original film, the trauma that she's experienced from the original film. So obviously that's, you know, same. I agreed. And we're going to be talking about Halloween more. So just leave it at that. But that's our both. I think that might be our second unanimous, right?
I believe so.
Claire Foy for First Man. And this, I think these are the only two that have lined up. Best summer movie. Also, you and I.
Yes, yeah, that was the other one.
In agreement. The best horror movie to Halloween. I just want to keep track of that. We'll try that. I kind of want to touch on that at the end, like the ones that we both agreed on. Best comedy.
Best comedy. Moved away from her second. Instant Family, which is not in my top 10, but
we've talked about it a bit.
Yeah. It's you know, there's a lot of heart to it, but it's a legitimately funny movie with some great comedy from Rose Byrne. She's excellent in it. The kids are really good in it. And even Mark Wahlberg, who generally gives a pretty Mark Wahlberg performance, which isn't bad. It's just he has his standard range. It works here. It works really well. And it's a legitimately funny film.
I still want to see that. I think it still might be hanging around theaters here or might have just left. I don't know.
If you haven't seen it by Friday, you're probably not going to.
Yeah. I'll see it, though. I'm actually excited to see it after all I've heard about it, so that's cool. Mine is one that came out very early in the year but stuck with me, and I've seen it a couple times, and it was funny the second time, too. That's Game Night.
Nice.
I was initially really high on my list in June. A lot of movies came out since June, so... It's not in my top 10, but I fucking really like that movie. I think it's going to be a comedy classic. It's like really well directed for a comedy too, and like has like nice little touches, like the way like there'll be shots that show like them driving around a car, but it looks like they're driving around a board, like a game board, like little things like that. That's just like a little extra step that they didn't have to do, but it's nice, and it's really funny. Like the chemistry between Bateman and McAdams, really good. So, and Kyle Chandler, like the three of them are really funny together. So, and oh wait, I forgot. God, I can't. What the hell is his name? Todd from fucking Breaking Bad. Jesse Plemons,
yes,
as the cop neighbor, almost steals the show from all of them. So, I don't know how much more we'll be talking about that movie, but for me, it was best comedy. Coolest moment, Chris. You got something for this?
I do. There were a bunch of cool moments for me over the course of the year. Han Solo seeing the Millennium Falcon for the first time is one. Just about anything in Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah.
Recently, we just saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And the thing that kind of like really clicked for me, then I was like, that is really cool, is when Spider-Gwen shows up and saves Peter and Miles. in, you know, they're running through this forest, and she introduces herself as kind of the third spider person, or fourth, I guess, at that point, since another Peter Parker in that reality had died. So the fourth spider person, and it's just this, like, it just oozes cool. I loved it.
Nice, like, reveal of her character too, like her showing up and stuff. Yeah, yeah. It was cool. I mean, that whole movie oozes cool.
Yeah, the whole thing is kind of cool, but
coolest moment for me, dude, and I swear to God, like, it made my hair stand up and I started crying, was the opening credits of fucking Halloween, dude. Like, the way he's like,
it's pretty awesome though.
He's like approaching Michael and he's like, "Say something, Michael, Michael!" And then it just cuts to the John Carpenter new theme of Halloween. And then you see the pumpkin all deflated and it starts just filling back up, like letting you know, like, we got your back. Halloween is back. Like, oh my God, the chills I got from that. Like, that was like my ultimate nerd moment. Like, I finally understand, like, the people who are obsessed with, like, Star Wars or MCU or any of that. This was that moment for me where I was just like, oh, they're going to do okay. So it was a big moment for me. It's definitely my coolest moment in theater all year. And to change the mood completely, we're going to go to... you know, a lot of people will say this is like a mean category or a mean thing to do. I've seen a lot of people say this on Twitter. I say, I don't give a shit. It's fun. Worst movie, Chris.
Wow, worst movie. This one has sat there since I saw it. it was like the 15th or 16th movie I saw here. I don't give a lot of ones out. This was a weird year where I gave three of them out. But Deep Blue Sea 2.
Oh, I thought you were going in a way different direction. Okay.
Well, there's Death Wish. That's a possibility. And there's also Mute, which are the other two. But Deep Blue Sea 2 is such a trash bit. It is a cheap cash-in on the name of Deep Blue Sea, which is weird because that film is like nearly 20 years old. So what the hell are you trying to cash in on? It is absolute utter garbage.
There's some weird, I guess maybe horror sequels are low budget and shit, but like, there's always weird ones like that. Or we're maybe making Cabin Fever. Why?
Right.
I had a few for this category, Chris. Like, more than usual. You know, I usually try to see things I think I'll like.
Yeah, but, me too. And I think, I do look at it. I mean, like, we saw a lot of movies over the course of the year.
I was busy this year. I kept up. Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if it's because of how, like, it ended up being mostly a pretty good year for film, but there was also some major stinkers.
Yeah. So I want to just give shout outs to my short list. And Gotti, really dumb, but it was so dumb it was fun. So I didn't want to give it to it. White Boy Rick, I thought was a miserable fucking movie that was like pointless. Jurassic World, I think, is a terrible sequel that misses the point of what makes those movies fun at all. Like,
yep.
And it's just terrible all around. Like, it was maybe up until the halfway point, like, a really lackluster, mediocre sequel. And then it, like, dove off this cliff where the dinosaurs are in cages and we're in a fucking mansion. Like, what is going on? But for mine has sat around since the beginning of the year as well. And that is Mute. Like,
deserving.
I mean, this was a filmmaker who his first couple of films I really loved. And I was excited to see this. And, you know, it looks ambitious. It looks like it wasn't really cheap to make or anything. It's like this, you know, kind of full on sci-fi world, like Blade Runner type shit. But it's just like this Amish guy. It's fucking really. And these two doctors who you're like, are they in love? What's going on? Like, what is the point of any of this? And then it just turns out that I don't even remember what the plot was, but it was like a really not anything interesting or having to say about the human condition, like, you know, good sci-fi does. or anything, or about science or fiction. It was just like a really dumb murder mystery plot with these fucking doctors and this guy. Like, and it just, like an Amish guy where like his weapon, like his big weapon is like a fucking like leg of a fucking table that he was going to build or some shit. I was just like, what are we doing here?
Was there ever a reason for him to be Amish?
I don't know.
I don't. This whole thing was dumb. Such a bad movie.
Yeah, like it was bafflingly dumb. And like people thought the year, I'd be like, really? Was that the worst movie you've seen? Like, was it worse than Mute? And they'd be like, oh yeah, it's way worse than Mute. And nothing to me lived up to Mute. Like, Mute was incredibly dumb. Not even my biggest disappointment lived up to Mute. So let's move on to that category. What do you got for biggest disappointment?
So you kind of mentioned it in the last one. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. So disappointing because, yes, Jurassic World received a lot of shit. But it was kind of exactly what I wanted.
I found it entertaining at the very fucking least.
Right. Like, and that's kind of all I really want is fun with dinosaurs. Like, dinosaurs ripping shit up, humans running away from them. It's not that hard to do, except evidently it's fucking hard to do, because they've only done it right twice. with the original and Jurassic World. And they really, really missed the fucking point with this one. There's way too much exposition in the first act. Then there's this whole sequence where the island is blowing up, which is fun enough. And then the entire second half of the film takes place in a mansion, in an auction. There are not dinosaurs running around, or very rarely. Like, it's like what a special velociraptor chasing like a little girl around. It's another problem. Like, kids suck.
How about the dumb twist with the kid? Do you remember that?
Is awful. Yeah, like yeah, she has really genetically, she's basically a clone. Yeah. Like, the whole thing is fucking retarded.
It's like they do nothing with that either. Actually, what they do with that is the dumbest thing ever. Because the like, do you remember the ending of the movie? Like, this is I'm getting mad about it. Like, thinking about it again, like
where she releases all the dinosaurs.
Yeah, because they're like me.
No, they're not. They're fucking dinosaurs.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing? You just ended the world, and your dumbass fucking adults are like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Like, I would have smacked her in the fucking face and said, shut the fuck up. Like, what are you doing?
Shut up, cloney.
They're like me, so I have to end the world. Wee. Like, so God, terrible writing. What are you thinking?
So bad.
That movie deserves a special place in hell. Anyways, my biggest disappointment is Hold the Dark, which is the new film from Jeremy Saulnier, which, if you remember, he made Green Room, which I still like.
Yeah.
Don't shut up about. Like, I'll still push Green Room on people. Like, hey, have you seen Green Room? Even though it's a movie most people won't like. Hold in the Dark is a movie nobody will like. I don't know what he was going for with this. I can't remember if it was adapted from something or not, but like, it just is so fucking slow, and like, it seems like it has like a mystery, like an interesting mystery to it, but it never, like, you think it could be satisfying, but it's not satisfying at all in any way as it goes forward. It just gets dumber and weirder. And other than this really cool shootout between like this one guy who's like holed up in a barn and this like all these cops that are facing him, and it goes on for like 10, 15 minutes. It's amazing. And it's amazingly violent. And like, I'm telling you, just go to about, like, I forgot, it was like 1 hour and 10 minutes in the movie and just watch that scene. But the rest of the movie is dog shit. And it sucks. It has Jeffrey Wright, like, you know, like, I'm like, oh man, like, he's got a good cast. You know, I can't wait to see what he does next. It's coming to Netflix. Like, I was hyped for this thing. Like, day one, I watched it. And it was fucking terrible. So that is easily mine. I was having trouble, like, going, I don't know, what was the most disappointing? And then, like, as soon as I thought of that, it clicked right in there and locked into place.
It's a good one.
Yeah, you haven't seen that one, have you?
No.
It's on Netflix. Biggest surprise, I will go first and just say I didn't have this category filled out, and so we sat down to do this episode, and I typed in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I'm going to stop you right there because that is also my biggest surprise.
All right, cool. All right, so why for you?
Look, I like Spider-Man. I like superhero movies. I am – animated movies are weird. Like, I love animation.
Yeah.
But this looked like it was going for a more serious tone, but also wacky and kooky. And I just did not think that they could pull it off. And I was like, yeah, it's whatever. And I went into that theater and I came out, wow. Like, they made the best Spider-Man movie. Like,
yeah,
that's where I, like, now I'm 5-6 days out from having seen it. Like, I think it's the best Spider-Man movie that has ever been made. And, like, there's been some good ones, but I think this tops it. It gets the character right. It, and not just Peter, because, like, Peter is there, but he is more of a mentor. But it gets, like, Spider-Man, as in, like, in this one, it's Miles Morales, but it gets the character so right. And yeah, as an origin story, it hits it, but it nails it. Everything about it is great.
It really, really wowed me. You know, I guess I like Spider-Man. Like, if there's two like comic book characters I give a shit about, I guess three. It's Spider-Man, Batman, and Spawn. Okay. Other than that, I don't give a fuck about any. Like, I've never read an Iron Man. I never read a Thor. I never read it. Like, and I just don't care. I don't know. And, like, all these fucking Marvel movies are melting together in my head. And I don't give a shit. And so, like, I go up with, like, a guard up against these movies at this point. Even this one, which, you know, like, I think I told you before I went, I'm like, I need to see what all the fuss is about. Like, yeah, let's see. You know, like, yeah, sure, show me. And I'm like, I walked out of there going, like, that's one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen. Like, I was blown away by the animation, but it also has a story, it has heart, it has humor. It gets Spider-Man as a character. It has fun poking at, like, the whole history of Spider-Man.
I love how every time they introduce a new spider person,
they do that.
Like, they have, like, this, it's like this stock kind of, like, hey, I thought I was the only one or whatever, but it goes through, like, their origin story in, like, you know, 20-30 seconds or whatever. But it's kind of funny because that's exactly how comics are, right? It's like, you know, you're the only one until they create a new book and make a new character and eliminate you in some way.
And this thing celebrates the fact that it's adapted from comics. There's panels, there's thought bubbles, there's, like, when you get close up, like, when it zooms in on the characters, it's like almost little black dots to the print. Like,
yep.
I mean, this thing is put together with such care and love. And it's a compelling story. It has a great message. I stuck around to about halfway through the credits where I had this quote from Stan Lee that just drove home the message.
Has a great villain. Like,
I mean, I've enjoyed that villain since the Daredevil TV show. But yeah.
But it's like a lot like Killmonger. Like, you can see why,
yeah,
he would want to do it. Like, there's an emotional reason for it, and
it's explained in very quick, broad strokes. But that's it. That's all you need to know. Okay, yeah. He lost his family after they saw him being a criminal, and they ran out, and they got in a car accident. Yeah, dude, the movie kind of blew me away. I was really like, and again, for me, it's such a huge surprise because I go into these movies thinking I've seen it all at this point. I mean, there's been a ton of Spider-Man movies, a ton of superhero movies. I haven't truly been impressed with one since probably The Dark Knight, and this one truly impressed me. So
nice.
That's saying a lot. So I'll leave it at that for now. But yeah, it was pretty cool. Speaking of cool, coolest / most badass character, Chris.
So my coolest moment was when Spider-Gwen shows up to save Peter and Miles. And my coolest character is Spider-Gwen. Like I fell in love with her watching that movie. I want a movie with just her. or at least – and I've been told by mutual friends of ours that is happening.
That's cool.
She is going to be the lead.
Like an animated film, do you think? Or is
It's going to be Hailee Steinfeld as Spider-Gwen. And with other female spider characters. That's really cool. I love that costume. Like it's just really awesome. It's this kind of like white hoodie, but with like pink and black kind of highlights to it.
See, I don't know the source stuff, but I thought her costume was cool. I thought Miles' final costume was really awesome.
Yeah.
Like I thought he looked really cool. Like when it's like all these. I thought Noir was pretty cool looking.
Yep.
There's
so much about it that you can just be like, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
A lot of
cool. I have similar sentiment about my coolest, most badass character, and that is Buster Scruggs from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Nice.
In that I want a full Buster Scruggs movie. He's awesome. We only get like 10 minutes of him or whatever it is. And I just love like the very like courteous cowboy or however we want to explain it. But like also vicious killer. Like I love that combo. Like the guy who would charm you right before he's like, all right, now I have to blow your head off. You know, like I just loved it. I loved I guess Tim Blake Nelson is the actor who plays him. I would love like, fucking Netflix, you love wasting money. You spent like $100 million on getting Friends for another year or whatever the shit. Fucking give Joel and Ethan Coen money to fucking make a Buster Scruggs straight up Buster Scruggs Western / musical. Oh my God, I would love it forever. You'll be on my top 10 list next year too. anyways, I don't know. I think it, like, I don't know. You like that character too, didn't you?
Yeah, Buster Scruggs, fun. Yeah. Yep.
All right, this is one I was like struggling with, and then I thought about it. I was like, oh yeah, there was one that was really cool. Best credits scene, Chris.
I also struggled a bit with this. I had something slotted in there. I've now actually blanked on what I had slotted in there before, but if you haven't been able to tell by now, I really liked Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I remember watching like Spider-Man the old shitty cartoons, and there is this really cool after the credits in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, where Spider-Man 2099 played by Oscar Isaac.
Okay, so I didn't see this. This has got to be post credits or later.
Yeah, it's post credits. So Spider-Man 2099, so future Spider-Man, he ends up, he gets like this device that allows him to travel the multiverse, and he ends up back in Spider-Man 67, so the original cartoon. Like right when
does it look like, you know?
It looks like the original cartoon.
Ah, which I stayed.
So it's this like shitty ass animation. So with Oscar Isaac's character kind of dressed up in his costume, but shittily, and Spider-Man dressed up in his costume, but also shitty. And they're fighting back and forth about being Spider-Man. And J. Jonah Jameson and a cop are standing outside. And Jonah's like, no, just shoot him. Shoot the Spider-Man. Like the whole thing is just hysterical and not like totally ridiculous. It played really well for what that movie was. And yeah, I was like, yep, that works for me. There were, you know, there were some other ones over the course of the year. A lot of Marvel.
It's always them. So that's why I had trouble like thinking of it, because I don't really like these movies that much. So anyways, mine is from a movie I didn't like that much, but I dug the credit scene. That's Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
Didn't care for the movie at all, really.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Not even the action scenes or anything?
No, I was just so uninvested in the movie as a whole that I was like, whatever, I don't care what you guys are doing. Like, some of it was mildly enjoyable, that stuff, but it was like, I was so checked out of the movie that I didn't care. But in the credit scene, I think like the reason for me that like I really liked it is because one, it's dark, but two, because like I got it because I had just seen it in Infinity War like a couple weeks before. I was like, oh yeah, like for once I was actually able to tie one Marvel movie to the other. We're like, oh yeah, they do interlock, and that's where like he like goes into this other dimension or some shit, whatever the fuck that gun or whatever the hell they had done. I don't even remember.
The quantum dimension or.
Okay. There you go.
Whatever it is.
And as he's in there, like, you know, this, like it's like Michael Douglas and the Wasp. I forgot the actress.
Evangeline Lilly.
They're like out there, you know, monitoring it, and they're gonna pull them out. Well, then all of a sudden they just like turn into ash. I was like, oh damn! Like, you know, it's like a nice tie into Infinity War, and I'm like, oh, so now he's stuck in the, you know, in the Phantom Dimension or whatever.
Which, if you've seen the trailer for the new what is it, Avengers Endgame? Is that what the new one's called?
Yeah, yeah.
He shows up at the end of that trailer.
Ant-Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like the other thing is like, all right, wasn't one of the people that died fucking Spider-Man?
Yes.
And it's like, I read that there's a new Spider-Man coming out. I'm like, oh, that's cool. It's like, and I read the synopsis. It's like, after the events of Infinity War, fucking Spider-Man goes to Paris or wherever the hell on vacation, and, you know, runs, I think it's like Mysterio in it.
That sounds cool.
That was one thing that got me excited, because I'm like, I like Mysterio. I like him from, I know him from actually the games, like the video games.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So then, and I you knew it. Like, I knew it when I watched Infinity War. I'm like, there's no stakes to this. This is bullshit.
Yep. Because like the characters they killed off, you knew they were bringing, like, you knew there was going to be a Guardians 3. So them killing off, like, everybody but, like, Groot or Rocket or whoever the hell was still left. Like, it's like, what the fuck you doing? Like,
yeah, it's like,
when you kill off Black Panther, you know they're going to make another Black Panther.
Well, like, I don't follow this stuff enough. So I'm like, oh, well, they could do, like, an alternate, like, oh, we're rebooting. We're doing an alternate timeline. Or we're doing something that's in the past before when they died in the Infinity War. But no, it's like somehow they're just gonna find a way around it, like a fucking bad soap opera.
And they that's, you finally hit the nail on the head with comic books.
That's what it is. That's what the MCU
they are.
Is.
They are, the soap operas have run for 40, 50 years. Comic books, same fucking thing. Like,
yeah,
like Bruce Wayne doesn't die, right? Like. And I mean, I know we're talking about Marvel here and he's DC, but like, you don't kill off those people. Not really. They never really stay dead. So
it's like maybe in one storyline they kind of did, or they got old or whatever, you know.
Right.
But then we're going to restart it over again or whatever. So, or find another way to do it. But anyways, enough pontificating about stupid superhero movies. Best score, Chris.
Halloween.
All right, John Carpenter coming back.
I mean, I have some slight quibbles with it. I wish there was more to I wish there was more of the actual theme throughout the film, but for the most part, like it really works. Like the overall score works very well with that, with the movie. I just wish that the theme was there a little bit more, but
yeah, I wish it was more like even more synth than it is, like just more like balls out 80s, but it's like,
yeah,
it is really nice to get Carpenter back. There are tracks that really stand out, and including like one where it's like this violin thing going on over it's like, where it's like, I can't even do it right, but there's some cool tracks. I almost chose it for mine, just to, like almost like as encouragement for, you know, John Carpenter, please keep doing this course. But one that really stuck out for me, and I really loved, and I also bought and listened to, you know, a little bit, is First Man.
Nice.
I really like it. It's a very traditional, like, drama score, you know? So it's not like my usual jam of, like, synth fucking 80s shit.
Right.
But just a really compelling melody, or whatever you want to say. For whatever reason, that theme stuck with me. And even though, like, the whole score is basically variations on, like, one or two themes, they were really good. They added a lot of atmosphere to First Man, I think. Like, that movie has this kind of, like, weird, like, eerie, otherworldly kind of atmosphere to it with the music. So, yeah, is the one that stuck out to me. I think that one will get nominated. Who knows if it'll win. All right, best trailer, Chris.
So coming into this, I kind of I said I had been struggling with this one, but you kind of reminded me of that second Halloween trailer.
And, with the long tracking shot.
Yeah. I think the marketing for Halloween in general was phenomenal. And that second trailer was really, like, that was the one where it was like, I think they might have.
They did it? Yeah. Like, it has them running to the kids, and it has that music cue.
Yep.
The same one that's in the original when he runs into the kids, where it's like,
yep.
And then he, like, turns and he starts walking, and she's like, 40 years ago. Like, you hear Jamie Lee talking over it, like, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, damn. And it's just like following him as he does this kill. Like, kind of reminds you of the opening of Part 2. Like, yeah, it's a great trailer. I almost went with it, Chris, but like, I ultimately went with A Star Is Born, and it's because obviously I was gonna be hyped for like Halloween no matter what, but like, this trailer got me hyped like no other trailer throughout the year. Where I was just like, oh man, this looks like it's just going to be one of those experiences at the movies. Like, big music, big entertainment, big stars, you know, like. And it's like, the trailer for A Star Is Born is almost like this awesome little short film with this really great song in it. And it perfectly encapsulates, like, the, you know, the experience you're going to be in for with the movie. Although the movie, like, when I did finally see it, was almost darker and more about like addiction and shit than I thought it would be. It's still like, I don't know. The trailer did a great job of selling that movie and getting my ass in the fucking seat to see it.
It was a great,
and it has that great song, you know. Two of the songs.
I do wish that it did not. I mean, they started marketing that film really early in the year, and I feel that I saw it every fucking time I went to the movies.
Yeah, that's true. But then part of that was like solidifying it. Like, the hype worked on me. It solidified it in my head as like, this is an
event. Right, this is a must-see film.
And that marketing, even though it was like, by the end of it, it was almost like they hyped it up too much. Like, dude, that fucking movie made bank. Big bank for like an original film that's a musical. So they did something right. The next category, Chris, I think you told me beforehand that you didn't have a winner for best documentary.
That is true.
So you're going to have to defer to my vote Yes. Two votes to this. My answer here, my pick, is going to seem weird once you hear my top 10 list, because my runner-up actually places higher on the list.
That is a little weird.
But my reasoning is because my pick is the type of documentary I appreciate more. I know it sounds weird to say, but like, Minding the Gap is my choice. And the reason I chose it over the other is because the other is just like one of those interview talking head type documentaries where like it's people talking about a story that happened, and Minding the Gap is capturing a story that happened. You know, I think that there's something to be said for you had the camera there and caught it as it happened. Yeah. When you're doing a documentary film, that just, it's just more interesting, whether I think the story's more interesting or not, or whatever, like the fact that like it's unfolding for real in front of me, that's why, right, I went with Minding the Gap.
Like you're capturing any drama, yeah, any crazy shit that happens. It's all real. It's like happening in real time.
Like it's playing out for all intents and purposes in the way it's edited, like a dramatic film.
Right.
And Minding the Gap gets like little special notice for me just because like it was shot and it takes place in Rockford, Illinois, which is like very close to where I live. Like my friends grew up there, et cetera. Like, and it's like, I watch that movie Minding the Gap and I'm like, oh, there's Uncle Nick's. Like I've eaten there. Like, you know, I've been to Rockford. It's not where I grew up, but like I go there. That's where I have to go to. I went to see Mission Impossible there in eighth grade and Sorry to Bother You, you know, like, so it's close enough that like, it feels like there's like a special attachment. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it is largely about like them growing up in this hopeless town, like that Rockford is. And like a lot of people from Rockford talk about it that way, or they call it like Rock City, you know, like crack rocks and shit like that. Like, you know, it's a rundown city, you know? And it's about these kids who are growing up there, and one of them wants to be a filmmaker, so he's just recording them all the time. And he just captures them, kind of the bulk of the film is them transitioning from being high school students into being adults who have to face real problems and, you know, start having kids and start having to provide and stuff like that. It's a movie that like I didn't want to oversell when we first talked about it. I seem to remember even saying that. I'm like, eh, that's pretty good.
Right.
But I think the more I've thought about it, I'm like, no, that was something pretty special. And it's about a lot of things at once. I'd say the biggest theme in it is about domestic abuse, actually. But it has, you know, it has to do with racism, all sorts of stuff. So if you have Hulu, that's where it is. I'm sure there might be other ways to see it, but that's the easy way to see it. And for me, that's my best documentary, with a very strong runner-up in Three Identical Strangers. So that's nice. That category. And Chris also agrees.
I do.
Or you have. I mean, check it out. Maybe you will agree when you see it. We're getting near the end here, Chris. Best dialogue.
Sorry to Bother You.
All right. I mean, I like that.
There is a snappiness and a realness to that dialogue that we don't get in a lot of films anymore. Mostly because everybody is trying to write how they think people talk, as opposed to just kind of like writing shit down and going with it. And that's what happens here with Sorry to Bother You. Yeah, it's outlandish, it's over the top, but a lot of times, like, you can actually see sort of conversations like this unfolding in your real life. I think you compared it a bit to like Kevin Smith, but with more of a message behind it.
Kevin Smith is very apolitical almost. He's like on Twitter, he doesn't talk about politics.
Yeah,
this movie is politics.
Yeah, it totally. And it's like if Kevin Smith had a message or something that he wanted to push across, this would be the result of that. And it does. It just, you know, it captures something that you don't get in bigger mainstream films.
There's just also just some really funny, like, off the wall shit. Like, there's like a part where he's riding up the elevator for the first time to go work on the top floor or whatever. And it's like the elevator's talking to him, and it's like, I hope you didn't jerk off today. We're going to need you to have that spunk. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Or like, there's like a part where he's taking the promotion and he's walking into work and he's like crossing the picket line and he gets confronted by one of his coworkers and they're like, I hope you're having a really nice day. I hope you are too. Let's, you know, like, let's go out after. Like they just kept like, they're basically just saying fuck you to each other, but it's just like them, like, I hope you have a really great day. Yeah, so I could see where it's a good choice. I went with my usual bullshit of I really like flowery language of Westerns. And so I went with the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. You know, it's like literature come to life almost, the way people talk. You know, the Coen brothers have a knack for that to begin with. I think they really kind of really thrive in the Western genre. So I guess it's a boring choice a little bit, but I just love, like, to me, like, the best dialogue last couple of years, like, in my mind, is like, if you give me a Western or Western type film with dialogue, good dialogue like that, that's my jam. So I went with that.
Nice.
Another fun category. And again, this is another one where, like, people be like, you're a fucking asshole because you did this. And it's just like, chill out, dude. We're just having fun here. Most overrated.
Most overrated. Well, yes, it's...
I had a lot.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to choose.
There were a lot of films that, like, critics really kind of, you know, clung to or hyped up throughout the year. And I think you actually, the film I'm going to name here, you actually enjoyed it a good amount. But it did not work for me on any level, and that's Revenge.
Okay.
It's the revenge film. What would you call it?
It's like
I spit on your grave.
Spit on your grave. Yeah.
I don't know. Everyone was like, oh, it's, you know, it's subverting that genre. And
here's what I'll say. I liked it. How is it subverting the genre?
Yeah,
it's exactly one of those movies.
It is that genre. it is that.
And it has, like, even though it's the female director, it has the male gaze. Like, it's looking at this girl, like, I don't know. If it was directed by a guy, it would have been criticized for some of the shit it does. And I'm
it's still sexualizing her in every way. Yeah. Like, maybe that was not the director's intention. She modeled it after how other films in this genre have been shot. And I don't know. I am kind of over that type of film. And I did not get the full hard on that people had for this film. So,
I mean, I agree with part of what you're saying here. I didn't get a full hard on, but I had an okay time with it. I had fun with it. I could still be entertained by the type of movie, I think. It wasn't even on my short list. I had, dude. All right, so this is my short list. You Were Never Really Here. It's the latest film from Lynn Ramsey, who she did. We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. You Were Never Really Here stars, I think it's Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, and yes. Yeah.
It's on Amazon Prime now. So if you want to see it, Chris, you can. You know, no rental. But I thought it was just really dull and dreary and pointless. And I loved, you know, we needed talking about Kevin. So I don't know. It just didn't connect with me. Like, and that's one that I still see people talk about. Like, oh, it's one of the best movies of the year. You know, this is her best film. I'm like, not for me. Another one was Eighth Grade, which I liked. I had no real problem with.
Yeah.
I just went into it expecting it to be like slightly more mind-blowing than it was. And that's based on like how some of the reviews were, like, oh, it's this rapturous film, and you know, and just, you know, me personally, I guess I might have blown it up too in my head because I really like Bo Burnham as a stand-up comedian, but Annihilation.
Oh
some,
yeah,
some critics act like this is like the second coming. I don't get it. Like I liked it okay. I didn't really like personally connect with it, you know. I thought it was fine, but like some critics are just like, that's the best thing ever made. But the number one for me was one that like almost every critic really loves, and I walked away from going, I don't know, it was okay. The ending was kind of dumb and weird, and that's First Reformed. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for that.
I don't think so.
So it's Ethan Hawke as a priest, and it is by the writer of Taxi Driver.
Okay.
And it's kind of, it's not like a sequel to Taxi Driver, but it's like this writer, Paul Schrader, is like always kind of writing about the lonely man, you know, like it's a kind of a theme. And like, this is the one that feels like most connected to Taxi Driver probably.
Right.
And it's about this priest who, he's confronted by the fact that, like, you know, we are destroying the earth and God would probably not want us to do that. And he starts to ask questions about it and finds out that, like, the Catholic Church doesn't give a shit and, like, they're all corrupt and shit. And it's a movie that wrestles with shit like that. And everything I'm just telling you, it sounds like something that's totally up my alley. And it kind of, like, I was kind of pretty interested in this movie throughout. But then the ending happens, and I thought it was just, like, not a very great ending. And also put that up against the fact of how much critics, like, praise this thing to high heaven, where I was just like, that was the most overrated. Like, out of all these movies, like, a lot of them that I thought were overrated, like, everyone walks away from First Reform saying, like, how it's just this masterpiece, and I'm just like, I don't know, dude. It's kind of dull, and ending sucked, and who cares? And, like, anyone who's sitting there going, it's better than Taxi Driver or anything like that, like, you're insane, dude. Like, anyways, so that's mine. Check it out. I think that might be somewhere out there for free at this point. I don't know, though, for sure.
Nice.
And let's end this episode with something. Let's be nice to something. Most underrated, Chris.
Most underrated. So I think it got passed over in a large variety because of the backlash from The Last Jedi, and also
I should have seen this coming.
Also, just Disney did a shit job of spacing this, like. Don't Star Wars is not Marvel. You cannot release one of these films every 4 months.
You shouldn't do that with Marvel either, though.
You shouldn't, but they haven't felt that sting, right? Like, they still make $700 million for each film they put out. And if you're expecting every Star Wars movie to make $1 billion, you can't do that. Like, it's not Marvel. You have not conditioned the audience to come out to one of these every 4 months. Solo should have been releasing right now. And yeah. instead they released it like in May. And I think that it nosedived because of that. Critics seem to be okay on it, but fans just did not turn out for it at all. And I feel in a way like, you know, it's been underrated because of that. Like, it is a super fun adventure movie. It is different in feel than the other three of the Disney Star Wars movies. So I think that if you are looking for a fun time, Solo hits the right notes.
I should have seen it coming. That's all I can say. Probably. For me, and you'll probably not be surprised by this either, it's The Strangers Prey at Night.
Yeah.
I just don't get, like, I understand normal critics being like, yeah, fuck that movie, it's a dumb slasher movie. But it's like also felt like even critics who normally are pretty fair to horror movies were like, no, this is just an uninspired slasher movie. And it's like, I don't know. And maybe it is uninspired, but it is well done, in my opinion. Like really well done. Like, when I watched it again, I was like, we talked about this. Like, there's individual things that actually stand out in your memory almost a full year later now. Because this is, I think, came out in January or something. That are still, like, I remember, like, the scene in where in the pipe wherever she sneaks up behind her in the dark, or the whole ending, or the pool scene, the soundtrack, all that stuff. Like, we've had a conversation about this recently, so that's mine. Although I do give a runner up to The Predator. I think that movie, while bad, is super entertaining, like, especially all the fucking idiot, like, prisoners on the bus.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that there's something fun to that movie for sure.
Yeah, like don't get me wrong, I think it's kind of bad. Like, pretty much it's bad, but like, there's bad where I could be entertained, and that was definitely The Predator for me. Like, I was like laughing my ass off throughout most of it. Even when, you know, maybe sometimes I'm laughing at it. Like, when he sticks his thumbs up through the fuck. I mean that is it's supposed to be a laugh, but you're also just like, wow, really? This is where, like, the level we're on with the Predator film at this point. Like, you guys just don't give a fuck. All right. And so that's our awards for 2018. If you want to know best picture, you're going to have to turn to the next episode where we count down our top 10 of the year.
Yeah.
So tune in for that next week.
Movie dudes. Do, 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 do.